what people really value and the sales reps that consistently perform higher is information connectors. So people who sell the information and then share the information. They build the credibility of the content, they're going to share the study that supports their argument, and then promote it.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by The Juice. Our mission is to squeeze out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals to help you push your brand to the forefront of the industry. Let's raise a glass. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Content Cocktail Hour. This is Jonathan, co-founder and CEO of The Juice here, and I'm thrilled to be joined by another founder and CEO, Tom Rudnight of Demand Genius. We're going to dig into all things content today, the evolving role of content. The hero on their website says content that drives revenue. So I want to dig into that a little bit. Early stage, two content founders here. So this is going to be a fun conversation. I will stop my rambling there, though. Tom, why don't you share a little bit in your own words about your background, kind of what led you to Demand Genius?
Yeah. Hey, Jonathan. Thank you for having me on. So, I mean, my background, mostly B2B, SaaS for the last 6 or 7 years or so. Various different roles across project management, operations, marketing, eventually kind of landed in sales, then flipped back over to marketing after a little bit of time as a, don't know what the word is on the other side of the fence, but working mostly within early stage SaaS startups and commercial roles, worked a bit in the media industry, which is obviously what kind of led us into Demand Genius. In media, they're very, very good at working out how to drive a business outcome from content. And that's where we saw a kind of opportunity to bring some of that to the B2B content world.
I love that. We're going to pick away at driving business outcomes from content, I think, throughout this podcast, because it's sometimes a mystery, sometimes really effective. We'll talk about it all. Before we do that, though, this is the Content Cocktail Hour. I'm taking a swig of something right now. I'm curious what's in there. We always ask all of our guests, what are you enjoying drinking nowadays?
So this is lemon and ginger tea. I'm being very British right now. We're quite simple in England until the age of about 40. So like my answer, if you go back 5 years, my answer was like 10 pints of lager on a Friday night. Now, I don't bounce back from that quite as easily as I did. Like my best part of my day is my morning oat latte. That sets me up.
There you go. I love that. I can resonate with the not bouncing back as fast. There's a cliche here in the States with 30-year-old males. You can get it in smoking meats, bourbon, craft beer, or like World War II history. And those are the options. I've chosen bourbon and craft beer. And then I got a smoker. And so I've gotten into everything except like World War II history at this point. But
well, that's fine.
yes, exactly. Well, cool. Let's dig in. Let's change the topic to content then. I'm really excited about this. So I mentioned it at the top. Yeah, I think what you're doing at Demand Genius, tying content to business outcomes, as you've phrased it there, is really powerful. But I think in the B2B SaaS world, there's been this interesting maybe history with content marketing that is it a brand investment? Is it a demand investment? Is it both? Can it be both? Can it effectively be both? I can tell you what we've seen at The Juice over the last probably 4 years is that a lot of people get into content. It's a brand investment. And then the market gets tight, budgets get tight, and all of a sudden people are trying to turn it into a demand return. So they build the content because it's a brand. And then all of a sudden on the back end, they're trying to measure the output. So tell us a little bit about how your unique perspective in media and publishing and getting business outcomes from content kind of led you back into the B2B SaaS world.
First, my answer is absolutely it can be both, right? And there's loads of different forms of content, different channels, and the way that you use each of those is going to be very different. I think one thing that we've taken from the B2C publishing world into what we do now is there are opportunities to be a lot more sophisticated with how we use content further down the funnel. But it requires a couple of things. You need to be a lot more tailored in how you treat people from a content experience point of view. And you also need to solve the attribution problem of how do we actually measure performance further down funnel. I think there's always been a bit of a thing in B2B because the technology doesn't exist to do both of those things, or at least it's not been purposed very well for B2B use cases. There's always been this kind of reverse flywheel effect that pushes content back to the top of the funnel, because whenever you dip your toes further down funnel, well, you're still measuring that content by traffic and by downloads. So inevitably, it's not going to perform very well in terms of those outcomes, right? So everything rationalizes back up to the top. But you're right in saying it does create this risk that you are always branded a nice to have. And when budgets get tight, it's one of the first things to go because it's seen as a brand building exercise. I suppose our whole thesis is that that's not true. It's a measurement problem rather than because it's not impacting revenue. And I think there's a whole load of changes that have made that more important now than ever. People don't engage with sales reps in the way that they used to, right? Something like 95% of the buyer journey happens outside of interactions with your reps. And that's getting worse and worse every year from our perspective. It's not because they're not learning about you, right? So what it does is it puts a lot more stress on your content further down the funnel to be a much more proactive part of how you not just capture leads right at the top of the funnel and kind of ship them off to sales to try and close, but how you actually engage with, educate. Things get a lot more fuzzy in terms of where that handoff exists between sales and marketing.
Yeah, that reverse flywheel you mentioned is a really powerful imagery of what happens, because I think you're exactly right. It's like, even if it's bottom of funnel content, you know, a lot of times we're measuring it with top of funnel metrics, which when you say out loud sounds really silly, but I think a lot of us do it. What you talk about there in kind of touching all parts of the funnel, I remember in a previous role when I stepped into the marketing leadership role, they were measuring influence of marketing. And I hated that statistic. I was like, marketing should influence 100% of deals. Like, because we know they're in funnel, so we should like be influencing that positively. It made absolutely no sense to me. So we very quickly changed that. But I always think marketing influence is an interesting statistic as well. Nonsensical a little bit in my mind. But you mentioned attribution there. And I feel like that is a big, scary word for marketing leaders, RevOps leaders, sales leaders. Before we hit record here, you said this isn't going to be a sales pitch, but I'm going to tee you up for a sales pitch maybe. How do marketers go about attribution with content? How have you seen it done well and how have you seen it go wrong?
You also need to know when to use the word attribution, right? Because attribution is almost by definition, there's a little bit of guesswork associated, right? We assign 10% of it to this, 15% to this. That works great when you're trying to allocate at a strategic level, assess different channels against one another. Because as you say, marketing is fuzzy. Buyer journey is very complicated. You're touching people and a lot of awful phrasing, but you're impacting deals at a lot of different points. So attribution serves a very powerful purpose right at the kind of strategic level. What it's not great for is tactical insights that you can use for content itself because there's a decent amount of guesswork in it. So our approach is we don't really want to get involved in the content attribution in terms of how we evaluate channels against one another. We use first-party data directly from a company's CRM and from tracking engagement with their website to give kind of 100% accurate idea of how people are engaging with content at each stage of the buyer journey, at each stage of the pipeline. So what it gives you is really reliable insights that, okay, this is where the gaps and the opportunities exist within the buyer journey, not just within the set of topics that we've covered, where we can do a better job of influencing demo and proposal stage with content and giving reps tools at their disposal to help them at those stages and the overall revenue impact that we're making rather than just trying to weigh it against other channels, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense. I got into marketing through the data side. I was a data analyst kind of in my formative years of marketing experience. And I've always thought that was a unique perspective. It kind of turned into a superpower of mine when I was leading a marketing team, because I think a lot of people get into marketing from brand and creative. But I say that to say I used to take great pride in like very scientific attribution. And I still think everything should be measured. But I think what I've come around to lately is even if you have everything wired up, all the plumbing to do all that, I am now a huge fan of self-reported attribution. Just ask people where they heard, you know, on that first sales call, where'd you hear about us? How did you hear about us? Even if you know, if your data is telling you, you know that, like it is invaluable data to get in their own words, which there is some bias, admittedly, there's some bias there in what they experience and how they relay that. But whether it's in a sales call or customer calls, I think that self-reported attribution is something I've become a very big fan of. Maybe you can confirm they saw you first in an ad, but maybe they consciously didn't even like realize that, right? And then like they come back to you via search or direct or something like that. It's interesting to know kind of what that experience is and what those different touch points are.
I think that's so powerful, right? Because it tells you what the most impactful touch point was in a way that your model, no matter how much ML you use, part of it is never going to replace. But I think the danger comes with attribution when people start treating it as gospel, because there are a lot more subconscious elements that go into it. Just because someone reported this as the channel that converted me, according to me, it's very easy, therefore, to think, okay, we need to lower our spend on all these other channels. It is a bit of a cumulative buildup that probably led them to the point where that channel actually triggered the engagement. So I think from a strategic point of view, that's great. But when it comes to working out, for example, what content should we be writing about, just because no one has pointed at that blog post or that social post as that's why I bought you, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not having an impact.
It doesn't mean you should pull back investment in that as well, right? That's the strategic decision. So that's really rich. The double-edged sword of attribution, always and forever, it feels like. You mentioned the changing role of content from how buyers are buying, which is they're not interacting with sales as often. What about the changing format of content that we're seeing in B2B right now? Some of the old school, like gated inbound playbook, I think it can still be done and is being done well. But, you know, a lot of the traditional content is now becoming video shorts, interviews, podcasts. It's being delivered via LinkedIn instead of a traditional blog, potentially. What are you seeing in terms of like the changing, not just the changing role of content, but the actual changing of content broadly?
Yeah, I think it's changed a little bit at different points of the funnel, right? So I think there's absolutely still a place for more traditional forms of inbound marketing, blogs, white papers, but I think they live a lot further down funnel. So at the top of the funnel, I think, yeah, everything happens off platform now. So I think as a marketer, if you're trying to play the game of competing for those like informational early buyer journey search terms and bring them onto your website, it's going to cost you a fortune. And it's also not how people search for information anymore. Those early conversations, the early research is happening via chatbots. It's happening with conversational AI, Gen AI. It's happening on LinkedIn. It's happening on G2. And I think it's about finding ways to put your insights in line and kind of go and meet your buyers where they are. What I think has happened though, and I've been studying, doing a lot of looking into lately the impact that AI is having on SEO, which I think is pretty pronounced, but it's shifted everything that happens on site a lot further down funnel.
Yeah.
So there's been a big drop in those informational search terms, but what hasn't yet been impacted is like the commercial, the transactional, the navigational search terms. So what we're starting to see a lot more of is SEO and on site sit a lot lower down the funnel, but it's still a very powerful tool, right? So it doesn't make it any less useful. In fact, it makes it more valuable because what you have, what it means is that what's coming to your site is super high intent, super valuable traffic. So you need to be a lot more careful with what you do with it then, because it's not this days where you're casting a very wide net and just trying to funnel some of it into leads that sales can go and close. These are people who are educated, informed, and in market that are now arriving on your content. So it tweaks the way that you approach the on-site stuff, but I think it's still an incredibly important part of what you need to be doing.
That's a powerful perspective shift on what's happening in search right now, because I feel like a lot of people are like, oh, it's changing. Like, I like your perspective on it of like, it just means it's going to be more effective actually than if you do drive the click to your site, because they have already gone through that search experience. They've educated themselves via search potentially previous to actually getting to your site. That's the optimistic outlook on what's happening in search right now, when I feel like it's trendy to talk about the pessimistic outlook.
It can't be a bad thing, right? People are like, you're getting less traffic. So as long as you're measuring yourself by those metrics that are right at the top of the funnel, you're going to find performance dipping. But that doesn't mean like you're getting incredibly valuable people. It just requires a few perspective shifts in terms of what keywords you're going after, probably a little bit of the formats and topics and stuff like that that you're covering. The other thing for us is this is where it links back to what we kind of our background in publishing. It means that suddenly it makes a lot of sense to spend a little bit more energy on how you actually capture, convert, and kind of build relationships with the prospects that do arrive, right? If you're paying an awful lot of money to capture a lot fewer high value prospects, you really don't want to go and put some shitty content experience in front of them where you send them to like repetitive gates every time they try and access a piece of content and bounce them away, because it's a middle finger to a very, very high value prospect.
That's a 1-2 punch, right? They're going to get to your site. They're going to be more educated than traditional search. So when they get there, make sure the experience is spot on, and you don't need to do the top of funnel tactics to try to convert them. I love that perspective. You mentioned there maybe a little like tongue in cheek, like if you are still measuring visitors or traffic, and this is maybe the question I should have led the conversation with, how should we be measuring the impact of content?
So I think they're still valuable metrics. For us, it's a lot more about how we're supporting the later stages of the buyer journey, right? If content has shifted down funnel, then it means that A, the goals have changed in terms of it's now about those little micro conversions. In what stages of the pipeline are people most engaging? Are we serving every one of them? And it's also about thinking about distribution a little bit differently, because suddenly probably your best distribution channel is not anything digital. It's actually the sales reps, because they are the people that have a really deep insight into the problems that a particular prospect is facing and can direct them towards the right content that's going to help them educate themselves. I saw a very interesting study. I think it was Gartner. I don't know if it's something we can put in the show notes or something, but it's the sales reps who lead with authority. So the traditional approach to B2B sales, right, is you become an expert in the market and you get on a call, you puff your chest out and you tell everyone all these great things you know. people don't trust that anymore, right? Trust in sales reps have fallen off a cliff. What people really value, and the sales reps that consistently perform high, is information connectors. So people who sell the information and then share the information. They build the credibility of the content. They're going to share the study that supports their argument and then promote it. So I think starting to take that attitude to how your sales reps sell and thinking about how we can arm them after they've collected information and understood the topic, the pain points that this particular person is feeling, to share the right content at the right time and act as a valuable distribution channel, I think becomes super important. But again, that relies on insight, because as long as all you're looking at is high level traffic, you're not going to be honing in on the right things. Just because an article or a white paper is performing best in terms of lead generation doesn't mean that it's the right thing to share after a demo. Doesn't mean that it's the right thing to share after a discovery call. So you need to get a lot more targeted with understanding how people are engaging in those specific stages.
Yeah, that information connecting is really good. I love that kind of concise description of, I don't know what's old, what's new anymore. It might be an old playbook, but at a previous company when I was leading marketing, we were in the healthcare space, and we as a marketing team would always try to arm our sales team with industry content. Not our own content, but news, media, articles that validated what we were doing and why it mattered, as opposed to the content that was, this is all about us, written by us, for us. Like, we would always try to weave that into the sales process of like, hey, this is third-party content. It's just validating that this is something you need to think about. And I think that's that kind of information sharing that is really valuable.
Yeah, no, I think that's huge. It's something we used to do. So when I was back in my kind of sales days, just as an SDR, we would have a rule where every day it's a different person's turn to share a useful piece of content that they found. It's not ours. It builds authority in a different way. So mixing the two works, but there's some value to, it's not us saying this. We do it at the bottom of every blog that we write. It's kind of internal links and external links. And it's always much more of a priority for me to make sure that I'm linking out to some external things that can lend credibility and to what we've said.
I'm going to get a little bit meta here. We market to marketers, right? And specifically content marketers. I'm curious, what does that mean for your own content strategy? Like, how do you think about content for Demand Genius when you are marketing to content marketers?
Oh, so much pressure. It's horrible.
Right? You can't fake it.
I feel so watched. I feel so judged. I think it's difficult, right? So we're still fairly young as a company. So it's mostly me doing the content. I'm very conscious. I want to be careful. I have certain things where I can add a perspective to content marketing from the background that I have, right? In terms of where it sits in the overall go-to-market function. That's where I can talk with some authority. In terms of the day-to-day of a content marketer's world, that's not content that I'm set up to do a really good job of. And I don't want to pretend that I know every element of that. The tactical advice, the execution advice, is hard for me. And I try and just stay clear of it rather than have perspectives. There's a way, a tone of voice probably that goes along with it that probably isn't also my natural tone of voice. And so it's something I'm trying to spend a lot more time thinking about at the moment.
I think that's a very authentic take on it, of like not faking it, drawing from your own experience. I think the things we try to do, and we're fortunate, we get to see data from our platform, right? We know what's resonating, what's not resonating. The things we always try to do is share data or share like templates, right? It's share what you know. At that point, you're not sharing opinions. You're literally just sharing data or what you do, right? And it's like not as fluffy that way, I don't think. And we always try to collaborate. I think collaborations are always really powerful. The more the merrier in our content.
I think that would have been more difficult when it was in a previous world where it was all about SEO and can you, you know, it's all about the listicle you come up with, because that's the stuff I would find really hard to do and I wouldn't be well placed to do it, but you'd have to, because otherwise how do people find you? I think fortunately when content lives a little bit further down funnel, it enables us to talk about what we know a little bit more and not have to talk so much about the pieces we don't know about.
I think when we don't know, that's like, all right, let's go get somebody that does know, right? Like, let's bring somebody in, and then you get to play the role of not knowing, right? And again, it's just very genuine and authentic that way.
Oh, it's very genuine for me, the role of not knowing.
I can always play dumb. It comes very natural to me. That's for sure. Well, cool. Tom, we always end these conversations by asking our marketers, what's one unpopular opinion that you have as it pertains to B2B marketing?
Yes, I listened to the podcast. I knew this was coming. I said before, most of my opinions seem to be pretty unpopular. I think the one for me, and this is the one that I think I hear people most often disagree with, is AI absolutely is coming for our jobs. You often hear the approach taken that people take AI in its current state and say, oh, it can't do X, Y, and Z that we can do. But if you talk to any expert, like AI is improving about 10x every 18 months. Mm-hmm. That's some serious improvement. I think it's very dangerous to just look at what you see now in ChatGPT, which probably already is lagging quite far behind their internal capabilities, and kind of think you're safe from that point of view. So it's not to scare people. It won't take all jobs. It's going to take a lot of time to move from the kind of low value tasks to the higher ones. But I think it is smart to be prepared for the fact that I think most of us underestimate the speed of development that's going to be seen there.
Yeah. Jeff Coyle at Market Muse, one of my favorite marketers, he was on an episode lately talking about this, where it's like, you can't even really like wrap your mind around some of the evolution of AI because it is so, it's going to feel so foreign to us, but it's going to be so powerful. And then Patrick Reynolds at Blueconic, CMO of Blueconic, was just on an episode that we just released. His perspective was like, AI is not going to replace you. Someone with AI will replace you. If you're not evolving your own skill set to know how to use AI, AI alone might not replace you, but somebody who has been evolving their skill set and has been adopting to the technology, they'll likely replace you. And it reminds me of, I don't know about you, but like the generation of like my parents who like didn't grow up with the internet, and all of a sudden their job was rocked by having to use email and the internet and search and calendars and all this. And I think there were several in that generation. So, you know, I'd say it if he was on this podcast, my dad, you know, who like suffered from not adopting as quickly to that emerging technology. So it's very similar. And I would tend to agree. The current version of AI isn't replacing content creative work. Future versions sure could, especially as content formats continue to evolve as well.
When you think how close it is now, it's not a huge leap that needs to happen. And the other thing is there's a lot of forms of AI, right? Gen AI is one, and it's kind of come for content teams pretty aggressively early on. You can look at it either way. It's come to help them or hurt them. But there's also several other forms. Gen AI was just the first one to productize. So I've been talking to a few people lately, and people in other branches of AI are focusing on, okay, how can we start productizing AI? Because there's always been a service for super enterprise when you look at more complex machine learning and AI, but it's a focus for them of how can they replicate what we've seen in the Gen AI space. And that, again, will have a similar shockwave effect when you start to see that in other strands.
I think the greatest skill set is going to be the ability to continue to learn. Marketers especially are used to that world. So kudos to those out there doing it. Well, Tom, if people want to learn more from you or learn more about Demand Genius, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, sure. So you can hit me up on LinkedIn, Tom Rudnight, or drop us a note, demand-genius.com. Yeah, always happy to chat. So if anyone's got any questions, then I'm here.
Love that. Well, appreciate you joining today. Fun conversation. Excited to watch you and the Demand Genius team continue to grow. Everybody, go check them out. What they're doing is really cool. Tom's been great to get to know. For all of our listeners, all of our watchers, thank you for joining us today. And until next time, cheers. Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by The Juice. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us on app.thejuicehq.com. See you next time. Same time, same place. Cheers.